Hey, good morning, everyone. I believe you've all got bats, table tennis bats, sitting on your chair again. I really have little idea what they're for, but I did have explained to me. But anyway, maybe as we go through the session, if we need to use them, we'll... She tried to explain twice to me what they were for, and I was still struggling. So the purpose of this really is to feed back from the small group sessions we had yesterday on the agenda consultation. You remember three questions we were asked, one about the balance, two about the research agenda, and three about any suggestion which we'd have from a communication perspective. So we do have slides from each of the groups. Maybe we could start with group one. And I think it was Linda that was heading that up. I hand over to you. Thank you.
Okay, so there's our lovely group, and I think I've only got two slides of commentary, so that synthesized a very lively discussion. And so if I can go to slide one. On the balance of activities, I think we all agreed that the there was a good, we agreed with the priorities. A period of calm, and I think what was being described of as improving the effectiveness. There was a good balance of short-term and long-term, so I don't think we had too much to say with respect to the priorities as outlined, but what we did think is that we should incorporate improvement processes within those activities, and we did have a trustee on our committee, which that's why that is in red, so just so you know, that is Sir Callum McCarthy. That's his comment, and I think we all agreed that there should be some specific measures of success for each of the activities. Then we got on to some sort of process improvements so that we would have that processes to unlock priorities, and I think that is the intention. You know, what we see is the priorities there today. You can have priorities added to it depending on what pops up in the next few years. We thought there should be an issues process and feedback loop, so as issues are raised, there's a better feedback loop on why or why not those issues are being addressed, as well as some screening for the IFRIC activities so that they can also be streamlined. So in that whole group, it was really streamlining and making it more effective internal to the IASB processes and including measures. With respect to the research activities, we thought that we could improve the efficiency and effectiveness of the IASB if we further leverage the universities and national accounting standards to do some of that research so that you get a head start. So I don't know if my group wants to add anything on there before we go to the next.
Can I just ask, sorry, maybe I missed it or misunderstood, the unlock priorities, can you just walk through that again. What do you mean by that?
When we discussed whether those priorities were completely locked down, like there was a research list of priorities, and that was a list of priorities that were for the next 5 years, but you know, things are going to happen in the world, and how do you fit those in? So we would need an unlocking process and a process to add to that. It was just more to clarify if things came up and they needed to be added to the priority and something moved further down, that's just life. So
it's really an issue of how you bring new emerging issues in as opposed to how you prioritize what you've already got on that list. Is
correct.
That right?
Okay. I think that's correct. Any other comments from my group or? So with question two, I did have the pen, so push down accounting is key for insurers, and I've been talking to Daryl on that, so it's ingrained in his, I think I'll just keep pushing that button, Daryl. and then I think the inflation one was the other active research programs that is already in progress, so I'm not sure that needed to be further up the chain or not. We didn't have anything to take off when we pushed down accounting on there, but that was our question two. Question three was the communication. When we talked, it often this came up with question one. As we were talking through question one, we realized that The agenda paper or the agenda priorities, they actually flowed very nicely. And so what we're doing with implementation activities that are designed to build an understanding and following in the implementation of, you know, providing the guidance and stuff, followed up by the post-implementation reviews. And then possibly that may result in other changes and unlocking, who knows. But all of those sort of nicely flow so that you've got a comprehensive plan. And so we thought that it might be important to show how all of this stuff hangs together. And we all, at this point, maybe it's back into the recommendations, but again, the universities and regulators can help with those post-implementation reviews. So you may, on the communication and feedback, may want to bring in how other people can help you achieve your goals. So, anyone comments from group one that we missed anything here?
Sorry, but I do not quite understand what you, what do you mean by the fulsome plan? What is this about? Is it the post-implementation reviews or
I think that the activities are all flowing together nicely so that one can help lead into another. So the implementation followed by the post-implementation review. And then research activities, how it, that could, some items could flow into that. So it was more of a, it wasn't key, different pieces of the activities, but how the activities related together.
So really how different parts of the agenda fit together in terms of a sort of end-to-end process. Is that sort of...
Is that what we have to explain better? Or
I think that if you explain that, people would help understand. It provides context for people to understand why this is a good plan. So it was actually... you've got an ability... It does seem to fit nicely when we talk through it, and therefore to put that into context. It didn't pop out on the original agenda papers, but it was there when we talked about it.
Thank you. I have a question to better understand your views. What would be the difference between post-mortem learning and the process of post-implementation reviews? Is that something that would take place before the post-implementation reviews, or?
I think what we meant there was the post-mortem learning as we're, it may be a different effects analysis. The effects analysis for the post-implementation review would be how well did the standard work. As you're going through the implementation activities, you're always learning how you can improve on the implementation activities.
Okay, but I don't think it is really post-mortem. It is a transition to the new standard and making sure there is all support needed as we go into the new standard.
Yeah. Right? Okay. Yeah.
Thank you, Linda. Any questions, further questions, comments? I guess I had one. I was interested in on your question one. You bold specific measure of success of activities. That also came up in the group I was in. I guess I'd be interested if there were any thoughts or suggestions as to what that might look like, or indeed why you think, you know, why it's important, I guess. Maybe that's obvious, but...
Okay, I don't know if anyone on the team wants to add here, I think it was just to show that the progress is being made, because it's more difficult to show progress when you don't have specific measurements.
Timeliness, yep.
Timeliness, quality, consistency, how are you measuring all of those things?
And the purpose of that would be what, in 5 years' time, when the next consultation is done, you know, well, probably before then, but certainly at that point, to be able to stand back and say, this is what we said we'd do.
This exactly.
Is how
you
we said
on
we'd
track?
Measure
yeah.
it. And
yeah. Are you on track like any plan? knowing that you're meeting your objectives.
Okay, any other comments, questions? No? Okay, shall we move on to group two in that case? Lothar? Sorry, thank you.
Yeah, all right, thank you. Right, on question one, the first question which came up in the group is, does the work plan reflect lessons learned from the previous years? And we actually thought it does in going in the direction of not having too many standard level projects at once, do more research before you do a project, and look more at how to implement the rules which have been issued. So we thought, yes, that's really lessons learned. And overall, we thought that the balance of the work plan is okay as it is now. But of course, we think it will probably evolve to some degree anyway over the 5 years. And then it wasn't so, there were lots of things which weren't specific enough, which you know, we were wondering about. For instance, how would the board react if short-term problems came up from any direction which necessitated action? That there's nothing there, we didn't find anything which would show us how you would shift priorities. Or what happens when one project is done, maybe research or whatever, how do you use the resources then? That also wasn't so clear to us. This is basically, again, how to deal with unexpected tasks to define a process. Would probably need also to define a process of eliminating something which is in the program if there's not enough room to do something else which needs to be done unexpectedly. So those were kind of procedural things where I think that wasn't so clear. And in terms of content, especially on the implementation side, we were wondering what is all included in that. Is it more, I have to check myself now what we, I think this is post-implementation. Is it to find shortcomings in the ruling itself? Is it to find if they have to be more flexible? Or is it to check if they are effective in being used? I think that's what we were trying to say at this point. Next page, please. Then also we felt that again on implementation that wait a minute. I think we were here, alluding to the fact that the use of IFRS is spreading internationally more and more, so that I think without the guidance in the implementation, but also the education element is becoming more and more important over the next years as we go more international into areas which are maybe not used to even the logic of IFRS to the same degree as in the traditional regions. And then another element was again on the user side to make sure that the feedback is collected early enough to then shaping the standards. Okay, next page, please. And this is still all on question one on the work plan itself. This is a little bit a section where members of our group said what we think is really missing or under represented. So goodwill treatment in terms of how do we impair or amortize, like that was. Some members of our group thought that should have more prominence in the work plan and be dealt with. Then the relationship between the conceptual framework and the individual standards, especially the definitions of equity and so on. That's something which some members thought should have more, let's say, prominence. Then disclosure initiative is only in the research element, and maybe that should be upgraded into the work plan. And then profit and loss definition, performance reporting, another issue which some thought is underrepresented. And then on the other hand, the post-implementation review, it seems now is a standard procedure which has to be done every time a standard is issued. And the question is, are resources well used in a standardized process without first checking if it is needed for that standard? If you know, if it is wise to lock in this resource use in the process automatically. Next.
Can we just stop there for one
yes,
second?
Sure.
I think just on the post-implementation review, I don't know the answer to this, but what is the ISB's approach to that in terms of what when one is required to be done?
I think within 3 years or after 3 years.
For every new standard.
Which is early, I believe.
It's even earlier, right? I think it's actually two years after.
2 years, yeah, that is definitely very early. It is not too early to pick up real oversights in the standard, which cause a lot of problems. So.
Oh, sorry, Hans. Strictly speaking, the wording is within 2 years of global effectiveness, and because in some jurisdictions things become the year end is a June year end, it effectively runs for about 2.5-3 years before it's picked up. And the other thing is, I think it's fair to say that in our due process, the board is able to do a preliminary investigation, and we split the way we approach the post-implementation review into two stages. We do a preliminary view when we're looking to draft the request for information. And if at that stage we find from academic research or the preliminary outreach that there weren't a problem, then we wouldn't have gone ahead, or the staff would have recommended to the board, these are our preliminary findings. We think there's probably no case to answer here, and we need to progress with that.
I think that was our main worry, that it seemed to us you have to go through the full process of post-implementation review, which is a pretty big process, for every standard. But if it's actually split up, which we didn't know, that you can look at the situation and say, do we need a full procedure or not, then of course that's better. We thought maybe too many resources could be tied up in that otherwise.
If my understanding is correct, and please the staff confirm or contradict me, I think it's only for major standards. We don't do post-implementation review for minor standards or amendments to standards. It's only when you have a big thing like leases, financial instruments, consolidation, fair value measurements. No.
It's a relatively new instrument, and there is a question, if we do a full-scale post-implementation review of every new standard, do we ever get to repair the old ones? So there is, I think it's a very valid comment.
The other point I thought might just be worth picking up on here before you go on to question two is, I was interested in your comments around both the disclosure initiative and the sort of P&L performance reporting, and I guess the agenda basically is a sort of factual statement of where those items currently sit from a process viewpoint. But clearly, as Hans set out yesterday, you know, improving the sort of communication effectiveness is one of the priorities. I don't know what other members think. You know, is that an issue? The fact that they are only sitting in the research agenda at this point, you know, reflects the reality of where those sort of projects are or initiatives are at this point. Is that a communication issue, something the ISB might want to think about, you know, in sort of setting out the work plan and, you know, making it clear whilst they only sit in the research agenda, they're actually, you know, clearly an important, they're behind an important objective set out by the ISB. Is that sort of what you were driving at as a group in making those comments?
Exactly. I mean, members of the group thought those two items, for instance, should have more prominence and should be tackled more or less immediately.
I think we have a real communication effectiveness problem here because people seem to see research as something inferior to active standard setting, whereas the research, what we're trying to make clear is that research is part and parcel of the whole standard setting process. It's where you begin. Sometimes you don't proceed beyond research, but all standard setting has to be preceded by research. It is, so it's not a, you know, perhaps the fact that in the past research projects were sometimes used to park issues gave it a bad name, but I think we have to explain better how it all fits together. That was also what the first group said. We have, for disclosure framework, by the way, already some parts of the disclosure initiative have already gone through the active standard setting process, so that in itself makes clear how important it is. But we have to do a better job explaining the different stages of the process and the fact that research is not something that is only research. It is very important.
Yeah, I think Hans, you've probably put it right. I think there is a, you know, there's a legacy issue here, if you will, that you need to deal with and demonstrate as part of this work plan that actually things that do sit on the research agenda, you know, do move through the process. And as you say, it's, you know, it's equally important component of the process you have moving to the point of actually having an active standard setting project. You know, clearly there'll be some skepticism, you know, et cetera, that I think inevitably, one, you'll need to deal with, and two, from a communication perspective, I guess we'll need to think about as well.
Yeah. Could I add to that as well, Gavin? Because, I mean, I think Hans is right that we do seem to have a communication problem here. But in the feedback on the agenda consultation, it was widely supported, the idea that we should have a disciplined research phase first before we start off on a standard setting project. And it's not this separation between a research project and a standard setting project isn't intended to convey signals about relative priorities. Now, the high priority research projects, obviously they need the resources allocated to them to make sure that part of the work gets finished earlier, we collect the evidence and then make the decision about whether to move on to the next stage.
This is set out quite well in that document you've got. Who we are and what we do, page 4, sets out quite clearly the setting the agenda, research projects, standard level projects, and how they fit together.
Yeah, so it may have been partly just a misunderstanding on our sides. But I wanted to, of course, report it as it was mentioned in the group. We could go to the next page. Research projects. The equity method probably is in the backup list, and some thought they should be in the active research projects. Again, the goodwill question came up. To get more emphasis. Then dynamic risk management. There were different opinions, but from the insurance side, there clearly came a statement saying that has to be standard setting has to happen there. It could otherwise undermine the credibility of the whole IFRS reporting framework. If you want to elaborate on that, then our insurance guy would have to say. And then business combinations under common control are important for emerging markets. And again, here it was said that if nothing is coming, then there may be solution created within some countries themselves which would not be advantageous for IFRS.
So on that last one, that obviously was a topic of some discussion at the emerging markets group this morning. Once again, I mean, it is on the active research project list. So is that the sort of same discussion we've just had to some extent around, you know, primary financial statements and disclosure initiative, or is there something else there?
I don't even know what exactly the background is. Do you want to say something again? Because I just relay the
You're telling us to get on with it?
Yeah,
I mean, we are. And that is something where in the board discussion, some of us said, do we really have to, we have already done a lot of our outreach, and some of us said, do we really need a discussion paper? Don't we already know basically the route that we have to take, and shouldn't we go straight to a standard setting? So if that is the message, then hopefully we can fulfill that.
So this is where I really get a chance to try out these bats, I think. Right? Well, we need to try it once, don't we? So in the emerging market session this morning, there was a lot of discussion about this. There was also some discussion about whether or not this was, you know, primarily an emerging market issue versus a much broader issue. I guess if you could show your bats if you believe this is a pervasive issue, you know, within emerging markets, but also outside of emerging markets. If you could hold your bats up, that would just be helpful to demonstrate what people's... So this is if you think it's a pervasive issue.
That needs to be addressed.
That needs to be addressed. Okay. Okay, so that's interesting, because that's...
Many.
Yeah, that's fewer bats than I probably would have suspected.
Okay, back actually. To research.
Okay. But we've
Okay. Yeah, all right. That really concludes our comments on the research agenda. And then we come to communications. There were a few things which the group thought would be important. And this really, like, I would actually see the communication thing in two, like having two elements. One is really communicating the work plan as such and, you know, just showing what the plans are basically to the wider community. And this is, I think, mostly let's say, reflecting how the communication should happen with those who are more involved and who actually gave comments and wrote comment letters and so on. Because, for instance, the first point is explain why projects were rejected, which were recommended or asked for by stakeholders. That probably is nothing for kind of a... headline communication of the work plan, but more interaction with those who participated in the whole process. Then explain the function of the research program. We discussed that subject already just before. Then explain how the work plan will actually is thought to operate over time. That's something we had already a little bit in the beginning, because that doesn't seem to be clear to us. Then define milestones for projects, because, I mean, you could put this also in under question one, like the functioning of the work plan itself. We think it would be important to have communicated milestones of what should be achieved when, even in the communication to the outside. How do you expect or plan to react to changes which are necessary? I think that's a little dot which had to go above. It's not communication with the national standards. The first five are really communications and feedback, and I think the last two are something in the process that national standard setters should be maybe involved more in the work plan setting and actually even be asked for their priority of what they think needs to be done in the standards or in the whole standard setting process as such. Because there was, I guess, a feeling that that wasn't done as much as it could be. But it's not really a question of communication. It just slid into Q3, sorry. So basically, I think that ends our or my report on our discussions. And of course, if somebody of the group wants to add something or correct me on something, please go ahead. Doesn't look like it. So then that's the end of our report.
Thank you. Any comments, questions? Do you want to react to the national standard setter suggestion?
Shall I react more broadly after we have done the four presentations?
Okay. Shall we move on to group three in that case? And Pam.
Thank you. There's a number of common themes that I'm seeing throughout this, so I'll try to be brief. If we can go to the first slide, thank you. So, in general, there was agreement on the broad balance and the direction, and that it was responsive to the feedback that the board had received. And we felt that the focusing on effectiveness and relevance in the two themes that were expressed as the communication effectiveness and the consistent application were appropriate. We do have some suggestions, however. If we can, thanks. There was a sense that there were was a desire for a little bit more granularity around the proportionality of the different. We saw the bars in the chart, some height expressing it, but there was a request that perhaps a percentage of relative effort be indicated as we move across the 5 years, you know, like 30%, 30%, 40%, that kind of thing, which I think Hans said he thought was doable. And then we also, there was a number of folks who spoke about a better sense within those categories of ordering, representing both the sequencing, which the timeline does to some extent, but also the relative emphasis and priority and effort level on the individual items within each of the three broad categories. We liked the chart showing how things spread out, but it was very striking that there was, it looked like there was no standard setting activity beyond 2017, and then it was just empty. And as I think Ian pointed out in the handbook, since research is part of a process and a progression, we felt that there should be a visual placeholder for things that might emerge onto the standard setting agenda coming out of the research projects. There was some talk also about the emphasis on major standards, the risks of the criticism like the FASB had received around tweaking too many things, and that perhaps there was some middle ground that wasn't major standard setting activity, and whether that should be depicted. Let's see what else. Okay, next slide. Implementation support. We could see clearly that the post-implementation reviews had been segregated out of that area, and we see the taxonomy segregation, but it wasn't entirely clear, and we felt that in the communications there should be a bit more depth on what types of activities were envisioned in there. Was that the education initiatives? Was it the IFRIC activity? Just a bit more fleshing out of what those implementation activities would entail would be helpful to understanding the overall work plan. A few cautions. Some folks felt that some of those research topics, depending on how you scope them, could be enormous efforts, taking up a lot of resources, and that therefore trying to ring fence the scope a little bit as early as possible would be helpful in terms of resource allocation. And there were several comments from participants about needing this work plan to be credible, and for credible that means deliverable, and that therefore that scoping conversation would become very important, particularly in the research area, which may have suffered in the past from less active progress. And then moving on to the research. And I think this is just the debate we had, is that making it very clear that the research agenda is not a parking lot for issues you want to keep on the radar, but not maybe make as fulsome progress as you would hope. So clearly we've had that conversation. That was one that came up in our group as well. Some felt, as I said earlier, that some of those research projects could be quite significant in effort level if they are not scoped to a reasonable extent, and that therefore maybe the list is a little bit too long. Then we emerge into a debate about what would you take off, and as we had that debate, we found that there was no agreement of what you would remove. And I think to Linda's point about the Folsom Plan, and some others made this comment, it became clear as we debated individual items, well, that's connected to this, and this is connected to that. So I think making those connections very apparent in the communications would be quite helpful, so that it doesn't come across as a piecemeal effort, and that the linkages are readily inferred from those who are evaluating the work plan. Again, ordering came up on the research as in terms of what will be the priorities and what will be the sequencing of some of those efforts. And let's move to the other suggestions. Some of these I've referred to. A number of people felt that it would be good at the outset of that feedback communication to give a little reminder about how the previous outputs of the consultation were taken up in the work program and how they're still reflected in the current plan. For example, the conceptual framework, which moves in another phase onto this work plan. And again, clearly demonstrating and describing the linkages from the feedback received to this work plan. We talked about the period of calm issue and also the fact that it might be a period of calm for standard setting, but not so for those who are preparers and now implementing a number of significant standards, but also that this work plan will have to be adapted to the dynamic world that we live in. And so we felt it might be useful if they can set out principles about how things might, new things might enter or be removed from the work plan during that five-year horizon now that it's extended beyond the three. I think this next bullet, again, more to the Folsom Plan, the comprehensiveness of describing and tying in how these individual items link to the broader messages. We also spoke a bit about the taxonomy and what that effort would entail. And I found yesterday Yale's elaboration about why and how it contributes to the consistency of application and how it responds to digital developments in financial reporting would be very useful for people to better understand why that is proportionately shown as such a significant part of the implementation and support activities. On the research, again, and I think this is a common theme, there was a request for more ranking and ordering of those individual items, and a description about maybe some more about the process of how things will move from the pipeline to active to standard setting. So as in the little booklet, it's clear that this is a process and that being on the research area doesn't mean it's deprioritized, but rather it's a part of a standard process of how things progress or are dropped at the end. Again, the broader Folsom Plan, I like that phrase, Linda, tying these into themes that we hear in the speeches and in the other communications that come out of the board. And last, and again, there was a cry, and Gavin may elaborate, for really getting a handle on the scoping of those research projects because it has such significant implications for resource use. And that's it.
Thank you. Any comments, questions from either other team members or indeed anyone else? No? Okay. Move on to group four and Jake.
Thank you. Hans, I believe you said yesterday that you can't define beauty, but you'll know it when you see it. So bats up if you see it, please. That's really bad news, because I think, as a number of us proved last night, we're in the pub quiz, we're not the brains either. So not quite sure what we're bringing to this party. Thank you. If move on then, maybe. That was far funnier in my mind, too. Okay, so some of the general messages coming out from question one, and I think a number of these points have been addressed already. It's right that we are seeking, or the ISB are seeking, to give greater emphasis to implementation support given the number of new standards. We see PIRs playing a vitally important role as we move forward, ensuring the operational effectiveness of those standards. We did have a debate around how do you move in case there is an unprecedented major crisis? How do you either establish a framework which enables you to identify which projects in the research phase you might seek to drop, should there even be a line for contingencies? How are you preparing, if you can prepare, to address one of those? We don't have the answers to that, but we think it's something that some thought should be given to. We thought that there may be some useful projects the ISB could do during this period of calm, maybe some form of codification or standardisation of terms across the standards. It was identified that actually using very similar or slightly different terms across different standards with slightly different meanings causes a problem, not so much in the English-speaking countries, but some of those countries where English isn't the first language. It's maybe an area where the ISB could seek to tighten or tidy up a little bit. A topic that came up a number of times as well in that sort of what are useful projects during a period of calm is transition to IFRS. So those countries where there is either IFRS-like or IFRS but for name, how can we help those countries transition to full IFRS? Thank you, Ida. Other points, we had a really broad range of views around the taxonomy, some questioning its value to investors or others, others saying they really understood Yale's comment from yesterday, there's if you lose ownership of this, then you don't control the taxonomy. If you don't control the taxonomy, are you preparing yourself for big data and the discussion we had around data yesterday, and some feeling that it might provide much needed comparability between entities. So a real broad range of views, and we wonder if there is a communication message in there, but I think that's been touched on already. This came out a number of times, and I've sort of put a theme around it, but there was a feeling that the ISB have come some way in sort of project management rigor and the communication. And we just asked the question whether there's more that can be done, even more that could be done to bring even greater project management rigour. So prioritisation of the projects within the various different strands came up a number of times to help the board to make those decisions around which are the ones we might drop if a crisis were to arise. And a feeling that there needed to be some sort of quantification of resource for the projects. At the moment, it was very difficult, actually, to answer the question that we were asked, is the balance right without some form of quantification of the resources that were going into the various different projects and the various different strands? On question two, there was a feeling that there was almost a too hard basket here, and there were a number of things that might be in the it's just too hard. So some of the use of the phrase feasibility, is it feasible actually to get to a standard, gives the impression that there may be some things which the board are saying we're never going to get there and it's just too hard. And so a number of us questioned what's actually in that basket, and there was a real fear, I think, that if there were things in there that were really valuable to users, that actually someone else might step in and might the board lose relevance over time if they weren't prepared to address some of those really difficult things. There was also a question raised about, well, what would happen if some of these too hard things were actually the source of one of those crises in the future and the board had acknowledged that it was too hard and weren't going to do anything about it, and then a crisis occurred. Again, this thought of greater project management rigour again came up in this question. We felt it might be sensible in the research project to set some deadlines for some decision making. So after 6 months, does there need to be a decision about do we continue the research? Is it ready to move into the standard setting? There was a sense that maybe the long grass of the research project, that's my phrase, not the board's phrase, clearly, that the long grass might be too long and you things might constantly sit in that research project without moving. So there needed to be some clarity around when things might progress. Again, that question of how projects are being prioritised came up in this area. And there was a sense that there needed to be greater granularity around the whole planning process. Thank you, Ida. These came up as ideas. Is there a possibility actually to use members of this group more informally to debate some of the possible blue sky projects and solutions? So whilst we've gone to two meetings a week, no reason not to use some of the people around this table for informal outreach around you know, what should the Blue Sky projects be, what sort of solutions might be seen on those. And I think this has come up already, a need for greater collaboration with others. On the communication, it was a sense that you don't want to describe it as a period of calm, or say that you've heard the calls for a period of calm. It's not a period of calm for preparers. They're going to be busy with implementation. So there's a messaging point around this is a period of implementation support. We need a positive, or it was felt that there is a need for a positive message around US convergence. We appreciate that convergence itself is off the table, but it needs to be described in a more positive way. We're still working together, or we're not moving further apart.
How do I describe positively that's off the table?
You're still working together, you're still meeting, you're still discussing projects. So I think it's less talking about convergence being off the table and more talking about what you are doing.
Oh, okay.
There were a number of us weren't sure whether some of the sizes of the boxes were purely actually the resource or the prioritization of some of the projects in the research phase. There was a real desire to clearly communicate the decision-making process, why are projects not being adopted, why are they not either in the pipeline, research agenda, etc. Thanks, Ida. We felt that in the communication space, it would be interesting to maybe come back to this and think about this in the context of the social media session we've got today. How might social media play a part in this communication around the agenda consultation? We felt there needed to be a greater volume, increasing the volume on what transition support was available to preparers as they seek to transition to the new standard. A number of individuals raised the visibility of the ISB outside of the UK. It still felt to be a really UK-centric thing to some of the members of the group. And there was a concern that in other areas of the world, there needs to be greater visibility. Could staff members be based there? Could there be virtual offices outside of the UK? And this was maybe a more medium to long-term thing. And the use of the term feasibility, again, it came out that there was a sense that we're putting stuff, or we're not adopting stuff because it's just too hard, and the use of that term sort of gave that message. So again, think about a positive way to message what you're trying to say there. Any of my group have anything to add? Apart from disappointment at the number of bats.
Well, you clearly didn't even get other members of your group to put their bats up, so I'm quite sure how that works. Yeah.
Just on the point on convergence, Hans mentioned it yesterday, and I just wanted to point out to the document that we published yesterday, the feedback statement on the review, and in page 38, we published our success metrics on strategic objectives of maintaining convergence. We might not have focused enough on it, so if you have a chance to read it and just see if that's a positive message, as you said, and maybe we would try to also emphasize it within the agenda consultation, because that's the plan. So,
Hans, okay. Do you want to?
Yeah, well, first of all, this was extremely helpful because we still have to finalize our document, and we can incorporate a lot of the messages that we received. I will start to give speeches about the agenda consultation beginning at the end of this month in IFRS conference in Zurich, and this has made clearer to me what I have to focus on to better explain what we are about to do, because that is clear from your message that we still need to, despite the fact that we've started out doing so, we still need to deal with these legacy issues around research, and we have to make much clearer than we have done thus far that research is part and parcel, integral part of the standard setting. That it's not a parking place, but that all standard setting, or that it is part of standard setting, all projects need to go through a research phase, and that has absolutely nothing to do with priorities. I also think there was a strong message that we When we finished our discussions in the board about the agenda consultation, we were actually happy that we made a much clearer priorities than in the past. The message that I hear from you is that we have to make sure that those priorities are met and that we have metrics in place to measure our progress and make sure that we progress sufficiently. Also make sure that we have the right scope so that we do not get drowned, for example, in performance reporting, which is an easy one to get drowned in. So that is also a very important message. What I also heard from several groups is that we need to make clear what kind of process would there be, first of all, to move things from the pipeline to the active agenda. And I think we have to make clear in the document that it is very plausible that since a lot of resources will come off stream when insurance is done and when the conceptual framework is done, that we can actually get to them during the next 5 years, and that it's not something that is just sitting there. So I think we have to make that clear as well. And we need to describe a process how to bring new issues to the table if there were urgencies that need to be addressed. Actually, where, you know, suppose that next year or this year a new financial crisis emerges and new accounting issues emerge. I think that's also something that the monitoring board could discuss with us. That's typically an issue that could be brought to our attention if it doesn't have our attention yet by the securities regulators as represented in the monitoring board. Monitoring board is very keen now that it has rounded off its internal discussions about composition, et cetera. The monitoring board is very keen to engage on a more substantial level with us. I think this would be one of the issues that they could bring to our table. I also heard from several people that we need to leverage the national standard setters better. We are certainly planning to do so. For example, if you talk about extractive industry, if we extractive activities, if we get to that project, we have already worked closely with standard setters from jurisdictions which have a lot of those industries. Russia has expressed interest in working with us. But the idea that by doing so we immediately free up a lot of resources, that is not true. We really need active staff in our office working with the national standards setters on this to prevent that national standard setters are just working by themselves, bring something to our table, and then it emerges that there is not enough support around our table. We really need active involvement from our own staff. So these are one of the yes, there were also several people. Everybody supported the fact that we want to give more emphasis to implementation and helping preparers around the world to implement our standards. That also should be communicated much more clearly, so that is also an important message. Then several of you said that we need to give some indication of the research allocation, and I think we can do that. Not very granular, but more granular than we do this far. Also to make more credible that we can get things done and get things off the table at a certain point. Yes. I think I... Yes, some...
I think there is a growing interest in the significance of the taxonomy, and we have to message that better. It is also something that I have on my personal radar much more clearly than a year ago, but not nearly clearly enough. I really believe it's very important, but how far our reach should go is not yet clear to us, and that's something we really need to get clarity on as soon as possible. What I also thought was a very good comment is we have to be very careful with this period of calm message. Because first of all, the next couple of years are going to be extremely busy for preparers, and if then we're going to say, yeah, it's going to be a period of calm, first of all, they won't believe it because we keep them working really hard. And secondly, it's not perhaps not quite credible. And even if we succeed in making good progress in performance reporting, and yes, that might not necessarily implicate a lot of system changes, it will still be perceived as a big change to many of our constituents. So I think we have to be careful in giving that message. I thought that was a very good warning. Rigor in the standard setting process, yes. Yes, and then there was a good comment from the last group about what do you do with things that you don't put on the agenda because they are so hard, but they might become very important, like pensions. And that is actually one of the reasons why I personally really insisted that we have to do something about pensions. I mean, the pension systems are under huge pressure. So even without faulty accounting, they are already really suffering a lot, of pension schemes. And I believe that especially the fact that we don't have a standard for something in between defined benefit and defined contribution brings a lot of pension funds possibly in unnecessarily trouble. So that's why we put it in the pipeline, and I personally believe it's very important that we do something about it. Yes, and then a positive message about convergence with the United States. That's not something that came from every group, but nevertheless, I think we might try to clarify where our position is, because obviously we do want to stay as converged as possible. We are not going to engage. I think we have to be clear that we are not going to engage in big bilateral convergence projects anymore, but obviously in the context of ASEF and on our frequent contacts with our American friends, it will remain important that we converge as much as possible, because we have to think long-term, and long-term I still think there is a good chance that the United States one day will adopt. Okay, so that's what my main takeaways from this discussion. Again, I think it was very, very useful. It sharpened our mind in terms of what it is that we have to do in terms of communication, communicating the new agenda, and also the message that we really have to be sharp in executing it and making very clear for ourselves and for the outside world where we are and how we make progress. I think that was also a very good message.
Thank you, Hans. Can you just quickly set out the time frame in terms of what happens next?
Peter?
So we've got a discussion with the ASAF at the beginning of July, first of all, and then we're planning to go back to the board towards the end of July with the feedback we've had from this group and from the ASAF. And at that stage, we're asking the board to sort of firm up on the preliminary work plan that they adopted in May. Now, at this stage on the website, if you look at the work plan, what you'll see is the current work plan, not the draft work plan as we have it here. The draft work plan is there as a separate, as a PDF effectively. But after the July meeting, we propose to switch on the website to showing the outcome of the board's discussion in July, because I think it's a bit confusing for people to have two views of the work plan running simultaneously. I think there's an expectation the trustees might still want to give us some feedback before it's sort of final. But I think what we're aiming to communicate publicly after the July meeting is showing what the board's view is and where we plan to be putting the priorities at this stage.
Okay, thank you. Would any members like to respond to anything that Hans has said, or emphasise anything, or make any other comments before we move on to the next topic? No, sounds to me, Hans, like you summarised it pretty well.
Okay.
So, thank you very much, everyone, for your contribution to that. And with that, I'd suggest we move on to the next session, which I think is a private session. So if there are any observers, if you could leave, please.
Okay. So next session is social media strategy. The communication effectiveness of IASB and IFRS Foundation has emerged as one of the key agenda or key challenge. And so I would ask that the Mark and Ben to give us their thought on the current the social. It's a quite new strategy, but the current plan or the current view on this topic. So, Mark, please.
Yes, thank you very much. So my name is Ben, and I'm the web editor, and this is my first time at the Advisory Council. So please go easy. On reflection, I wonder whether the Advisory Council pub quiz with all of its free wine last night was best preparation, but I wasn't a winning team, so I think it was worth it. What we want to do here, and I'm sure most of you will know Mark Byatt, the Director of External Affairs, and Christina Reitan, Head of Communications, we have put together a proposed strategy for our social media activity within the foundation to improve our communications effectiveness, to reach out to a wider audience. We think now is a good time to do that, and so we're looking to get your feedback and guidance on this strategy, which we'll walk through now. I'd like to just start with a slide, just to put a few things in context, some basic stats to run through. We set up our Twitter account in 2010, and we now have just over 11,000 followers. We get some traffic from our tweets. We do about, on average, about 20 a month, so around a tweet a day. It's about the same on LinkedIn. LinkedIn has a total of 13,000 followers across our two different LinkedIn accounts, one for the ISB, one for the IFRS Foundation. Again, we get a few clicks through. It's actually proportionally slightly higher from Twitter, but interesting, if you look at some of the other organizations, you can see one of our probably biggest rivals in terms of being a leader in the social media sphere is Deloitte, IFRS, and IS Plus. They have around 20,000 followers on Twitter. They do a lot of activity taking our news and other news and putting it out there and taking people to their site. Deloitte themselves, 308,000 followers on Twitter. LinkedIn, 1.8 million followers. We have some way to go before we can try to compete at that point. But it's interesting context and possibly should be where we're trying to aim towards. So So our premise really is that a cautious approach, a non-interaction approach, a broadcast of information approach, and nothing more than that, has allowed us to grow slowly but surely to where we are now, 11,000 odd followers. But social media is an incredibly important tool. And as I mentioned, this is probably the right moment to bring this to the table to talk about growing and being more proactive. It's an incredibly important method for people to absorb and gain information. Increasingly, websites are not really the first port of call for a lot of people nowadays. Why would you make the effort of going to a website when you can sit wherever you are and have information pushed to the phone in your pocket? You choose that information. You don't have to scroll through or filter through what a website provides. And those people that are choosing to get that information from their different sources, they're loyal to those sources if they feel that it's giving them the right information when they want it, when they need it. And that's why it's increasingly important to try to do more in this sphere to make sure that we engage with the hundreds of thousands, millions of people out there that are interested in this information, the information that we have to give out. So we are here to ask for your views and advice on our proposed strategy, to see if it's reasonable, achievable, whether it's too ambitious, or whether we're missing anything, whether it has any obvious threats, and to also to ask you to see if there's a way that we can all collaborate closer with a new strategy in terms of helping each other out, making sure that we can get each other's key messages across, to really kind of grow as one. So an objective: to become the dominant IFRS voice on social media. Obviously, it's going to be tough to compete with someone like Deloitte, KPMG, EY, you know, and whether we should or not is also a very, very good question. But Deloitte IFRS is something that maybe we should be aiming towards, those kinds of numbers. And to be as inclusive as them, to be as thorough as them with their information, with our information. And to do this, we're proposing a three-pronged strategy, each of which has three stages which can be done concurrently. The first is increasing our own activity to push out more information, to push out better quality of the content, to make sure that we are giving people as much information as they need. The second strand of that is to encourage leadership and staff within the IFRS Foundation to engage with our activities, which we don't currently do. It's not something that we've encouraged at this up until this particular point in time. But we know there's a lot of people within our organisation, and of course within all your organisations, that are, you know, that would be very keen to be able to push some of our content onto their own followers within LinkedIn or Twitter to get that kind of snowball effect going. And so that kind of leads into the third point, which is more interaction with external parties on social media. We're fairly a little bit insular at the moment in that we don't follow anyone, we don't interact with anyone, and so that's the third strand of the strategy, to try and build up more interactivity. So as I said, each of these strands can and will actually start at the same time. We expect the first stages to be about 3 to 6 months, depending on results. There's some data that we'd like to analyse before making steps to move on. And stages 2 to 3 will move on kind of as appropriate, depending on those results. So to talk about briefly the first stage, the first strand, which is increasing our own activity on our social media channels. This is frequency and relevancy, frequency and quality of content. We want to be more proactive, multiple tweets about individual events, sequential tweets to give people feelings for what might be coming up and to keep them engaged rather than just saying, we've produced a speech, here it is, or we have a meeting of the trustees coming up, here's the agenda. We'd like to be saying, this speech focuses on this, here's a little excerpt, get people engaged, that kind of increase in quantity and relevancy. And it's also something that we have started to do. We can compare something like the trustees event, actually, in Beijing in October. We did probably three tweets for the entire event, which would have been a pre-tweet about the agenda. We had one photo about the actual discussion panel, and then we did a tweet after the event with some of the summary of discussions. Whereas the last trustee event in May in Jakarta, we had a series of tweets taken at the event during the panel discussions where we talked about what people were saying. We did kind of seven or eight tweets over the course of the day or the 2 days. And so it's something that we're just kind of dipping our toe in the water and trying to get a little feedback. And interestingly, actually the tweet which included Hans and Michelle wearing some rather lovely shirts, did get more retweets than most of our other tweets that month. So there was some popularity. We could also increase the use of things like hashtags, trying to promote hashtag IFRS 16, so that when other people within the industry are talking about this kind of content, they don't have to only go to our feed. We can push content to hashtags, which means you can build that community that we can create or be part of. We would then encourage our staff to share all this extra quantity and quality of content that we're putting into putting out there, and this will be on the next slide in terms of kind of how we get our staff to share our content. As a result of that particular strand of the strategy and seeing how it goes over a kind of period of 2 to 3 months, looking at some of the data that comes back, when we also have the opportunity with our new website to allow users of the website to push interesting information, push interesting news stories to their own social media accounts, which we don't currently have as an option on our website. So giving users of the site empowerment to choose what they want to push out to their networks, their followers. The stage three would be to, and I think this, for me, this is probably the most important part of this stage that we'll build up to, which is to create bespoke thought leadership content, to really put ourselves out there as not just a giver of final information and telling people, here it is, use it. We want to be telling people how to use it. We want to be telling people why it came about, how it came about, what's different, what's important. It's something that we've started doing with some video. We've had some pretty successful different pieces of video content in the last 6 months. The Leases Standard has, we've done a series of videos talking about that. That's had more than 6,000 views. We have had several insurance contracts videos over the past few months, again around the 5,000 to 6,000 views mark. And we've had we've created debrief videos. Sue Lloyd has talked about IFRS 9. Hans has talked about leases. And these have been very popular. We've had a lot of views on YouTube and on our own website with these kind of short, to the point, interesting, explanatory videos. And these are perfect for social media, you know, trying to get people engaged in what we're doing. As Mark pointed out to me earlier, the mission statement animation we created, 2-minute video, supposed to be 90 seconds, ended up 2 minutes, but that's had 20,000 views in the last few months. People are really interested by short, snappy, informative bits of information, which is perfect for this. So the second part of the strategy is to encourage leadership and staff to engage with the work that we do. At the moment, we don't really allow any engagement, we don't encourage any engagement from staff at all. So we would like to set up a control group. It would most likely be a few people from the communications department, a few key technical members of staff who are positive and would like to take part of this. And we will be starting this, or we propose to start this, on LinkedIn. LinkedIn is obviously, it's a more controlled environment than Twitter. We have our two groups, which are, you know, industry specific. Everybody who follows the ISB or the IFRS Foundation LinkedIn groups are there because they're interested directly in what we're doing, and it affects them probably on a day-to-day basis. So it's a good controlled environment where you don't tend to just kind of push content out to the world. It's enclosed a little bit more than Twitter. So it's a sensible place for us to start. And we would be we're looking for people to the control group will be to share and like and comment on the different bits of content that we put out there. Likes are visible to us, and that's it. So kind of there's no real worry about that. Shares will push that content to the control group's personal streams, so that will go into their networks. So we'll be able to see whether we get any increased interaction from their networks, whether we get any extra comments, extra shares, any kind of snowball effect as a result of that. It's a case very much of looking at the data and seeing whether there's anything of interest as a result of this, whether it could be positive, could be no difference at all. But at the point at which we're happy with those results and the staff control group is comfortable with the way the strategy has gone, we would then like to move to stage two, would be to expand this to all staff within the LinkedIn capacity. And then we could do exactly the same with Twitter. Nice, tight control group, and make sure that more open environment doesn't raise any potential issues as a result of the strategy. Again, it's an open forum. It's not necessarily all industry-relevant users. People obviously follow everybody in a very wide capacity on Twitter, so it is a different environment. Close monitoring of that would then lead to stage three, obviously expanding to include all staff. And the third strand of this is to encourage growth through cooperation with other relevant parties, relevant users within social media. We don't currently follow anyone. We have 11,000 followers on Twitter. We follow two people, one of which is our own investors' Twitter account, and the other of which is a now defunct ISB account. So we want to encourage interaction with other users and organizations. We want to increase our social awareness. We want to know what people are saying about us. And if we aren't following people, we don't hear what people say unless they very specifically include our Twitter handle. So there could be an awful lot of information out there that is just bypassing us completely. So that's why we'd like to expand our followers group. And it's something that we would do fairly carefully, actually, in the beginning. We would have a select kind of safe list of followers, if you will, relevant international, regional, and national organizations. Public interest is obviously a key phrase that we want to be using when we choose who we follow. And that's... We need to make sure that we don't give the impression of any kind of tacit approval of any particular organizations. We don't feel that this is what social media is about, but we are aware that there might be certain parties who infer certain things if we choose to follow certain organisations, for example. As well as increasing our followers list, which would then obviously gain all of our additional content that we push out because we're being more interactive, we think there's a really good opportunity to identify specific parties within the kind of sphere of the IFRS Foundation, such as the Advisory Council, such as the Interpretations Committee, ASAF. You know, your organisations engage with social media. You've been doing this. You have strategies. We feel that there's a strong opportunity for us to engage and collaborate with your organisations to look at the positives and negatives of the policies and strategies that you have in place. What can we learn from your strategies? What has worked? What are the possible threats? Have you had any interesting results when you've liked or shared particular types of content or content from other organisations? We would like to start by following, liking, retweeting content from these organisations that we are now following, but we know we have to be fairly careful about what we push out to our own network. There are obvious tweets that we could retweet if we're, say for example, we have a board member at a conference that we don't have somebody in communications at or somebody else that can do our own tweets. If that conference has somebody tweeting and they are mentioning that Sue or Daryl or whoever it might be is talking and that they are discussing this particular thing, we see that they have mentioned this on Twitter, that's a classic opportunity for us to retweet it because it's useful for the people within our network, it's public interest. It's not simply blowing our own trumpets, it's saying, this is something that's happening, we'd like to let you know about it. With likes, we know that the people out there are telling their own networks that we have released webinars or video or other video content about our standards or about our work plan. And we want to tell these people, thank you for letting your network know about this and promoting the content that we're putting out there. So that would be a kind of a classic like opportunity. And it all builds up that kind of the social network. It builds up relationships between other organizations, other individuals, and ourselves. And the result of that would be greater social awareness of what we do through this medium. There are also key messages, you know, that we feel that we could work together on. There must be projects that have happened in the past that could have benefited from collaboration. Certainly projects in the future where we'd like to make sure that we discuss what's going on. And we can, you know, we can pre-agree key messages, and these ready-made channels of communication are open to us. We want to make sure that we use them effectively. So after, again, a cautious kind of toe in the water, meeting of minds with a nice select group of organizations that we work with on social media, making sure that works successfully and effectively, we can then expand that to a broader set of other organizations within the social media sphere. So, as I mentioned earlier, what we're really looking for from this proposal, from this presentation, is for a few key objectives, a few key results from you guys. We have what you might term a fairly ambitious objective of becoming a dominant force, but then we can look at that in relation to what really do we mean by that? Do we want to take over the accounting world? Is that possible? Or do we just want to be that within specific targeted messaging. Do you feel that our strategy, our cautious, step-by-step strategy, is well placed to achieve this? Are we maybe too cautious? Is this too slow? Is there anything that we're missing? Your experience is absolutely vital to us. Your guidance will be crucial. You will have had, I'm sure, positive and negative experiences, and we would love to hear about both types. You will have certainly have organizational accounts. You might even have personal accounts within that organization. Could be, you know, Hans Hoogeverst, IFRS Foundation as a Twitter handle, and maybe we tweet as Hans on a regular basis, see whether maybe some of those personal views maybe not entirely relevant, but you know there will be organisations that have tried to do that kind of thing, and it'd be really interesting to know whether that works at the same time or you know in conjunction with an organisational tweet or LinkedIn account. And then finally, do you feel that there are specific areas in which your organization and the IFRS Foundation can collaborate? I mentioned earlier about projects. What could we do? How could we collaborate to try to achieve greater awareness and greater success of the messaging around those projects? I feel like there's a great opportunity for collaboration to benefit all of us here. So your guidance on that is very much appreciated.
Thank you, Ben. Before asking any question or the comment from my colleague, I have a question to you. You know that in objective to become the dominant IFRS voice on social media, how do you define dominant IFRS voice? You know that depending upon the meaning of this, that our advice should be some different. You are, you know, comparing that the number of accounts followed by to Deloitte account, but you know, given that the resource limitation, that the competing with such four big accounting firms might be a very, you know, kind of impossible target. So
it's a very good question, and I think it's one for, I think people will have different views. Some people might feel that we should be trying to compete with some of the bigger firms, and others will think that we shouldn't. There's a lot of different information that's put out by those organizations compared to what we would put out. I suppose it's about perspective and what, A, we think we should, and also what we think we could achieve. We could try to look at more specific organizations such as the Deloitte IFRS account, and trying to get somewhere towards that kind of level of popularity would be a position of dominance. It might even be that you don't agree with that objective. It might be that you just say, well, you know, look at the extra work that's going into this, try to come up with some data that says if you achieve this many extra visitors to your website or this many extra followers on LinkedIn or Twitter as a result of this in a specific amount of time, that might be good enough as an actual objective. So I would, it's an excellent question. I think the objective is also open to interpretation.
Let me just answer that as well, if that's right, just adding to what Ben said. So you could quantify it in terms of followers or likes or whatever, but that is a little artificial. In fact, we've had numerous discussions over the last few weeks about what are the performance metrics for this strategy. From my perspective, I think what we're trying to do is establish a social media presence that makes the IFRS Foundation the default place where people go for information related to IFRS, rather than relying on third parties for providing that service. So we obviously have a number of advantages in that we are the global authority for IFRS standards. We have the technical staff and the resources to be able to provide high quality content on a kind of digestible basis. And so we have the right ingredients, and therefore it would appear to be a realistic objective to be seen as the dominant voice on social media.
Okay, thanks, Mark. Do you have any questions or comments? Hi.
Thank you for your presentation. I have a question for clarification. You've presented us a strategy for social media, and if I summarize it, the strategy at the moment is be there on social media, and what you describe are mechanisms to be there. But when you were developing this presentation, or when you were discussing about social media, did you also ask the questions with what kind of information do we want to be there? The stakeholders, what kind of information do they want to use? Is there a need for a specific kind of information? So, because at the moment I feel that you have just a strategy of we want to be there, and what you propose is more or less a one-size-fits-all strategy. So did you have these discussions, like what type of content do we want to put out? Is it for education purposes, consistent application, just general information? So has some discussion within the ISB or the foundation also tackled those issues? Because I will immediately say why I asked this question, because at our organization, the European Accounting Association, we also faced the similar issue. How do we approach social media? And we felt, as long as we didn't tackle the questions, what type of information is needed, who are the stakeholders, we didn't move really forward, and we kept turning around in circles. So that's why I would like to ask you, have you also thought of those elements yet?
Excellent point. We have, and I think there are kind of two angles. One is that at the beginning I mentioned people digest information in different ways. So one point of social media is that you're reaching out to people who might not necessarily visit your website on a regular basis. So therefore they might be missing out on bits of information that you'd like people to know about. So from that point of view, there's certainly an element of trying to make sure that all relevant information that you produce is available in as many different areas as possible for the users that might require that information. So from that point of view, there wouldn't necessarily be a conversation about the different types of content. It's more a case of getting all the content that we think is relevant out there. But you're absolutely right. I think it's something that we know what is popular on our website, and so that is certainly an excellent place for starting to understand what might also be popular on social media. But also it's a case of when you get in there and you start seeing that, we might come up with a strategy that says, okay, all of our technical content on the website is the most popular, then maybe the specific investor-related content is second most popular, educational material is third. And we might say, okay, therefore, we have 50% of our social media content is technical, 30% is investor-related, and 20% is for education. We might then discover on Twitter, LinkedIn, that we get different kind of engagement reactions from those bits of content. We might find that actually the educational stuff is shared more or is liked more. So there's definitely going to be a growing and a learning process involved at the same time.
Can I just add to that? I think what we're trying to do is really catch up in that we've been quite restricted in how we use social media. And as a result of that, I would imagine we will see our social media activities as a tool for broader communications programs supporting the work of the board, rather than having an entirely separate social media strategy. And so I think really what we try to do is establish the foundations that allow us then to exploit social media for the other communications programs that we are developing.
And can I also just add to that? I think that, as Ben mentioned, we are developing more infographic type video content, which we know it works well, sharing on Twitter and on LinkedIn, etc. So the content development on the website and the other activity that we discussed as part of our discussion with you about our wider comm strategy also goes hand in hand with this. So the more videos that we have that we can share, then that is creating shareable content that allows us to leverage on all those important contacts that already have a very wide presence that can help push our content out. So yes, it's about increasing our content, but also generating stuff that allows them to take it further and push it out and cascade our information further. But I think also in relation to some of our conferences, for example, trying to be more visible about them happening in the first place, making sure that we give people a taste of what is coming up, make sure that people see the activities and get the feeling that there is things happening and feel that they can kind of partake in the event without being there. Is also another way of generating content that we've done a little bit of, but that we can do a lot more of going forward.
Just one last comment, if I can be a bit of a devil's advocate, in the sense that when the team discussed this with us in the senior management team, my concern was that social media exposes individuals to criticism and possible exposure of the personalities involved. And this is a step forward that we've had a bit of not always great experience with. So it would be really interesting, and I'm sure this is not just special to us, so it would be really interesting to understand from your organizations how you tackled with that, because a component of the strategy, as suggested by the team, is the further involvement of not just the comms team as the front, but the personalization of information. And it would be really interesting for me, from a very cautious point of view, to understand what has been done in other organizations on that.
Thank you.